Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. That special election in Pennsylvania's 18th district today, maybe you knew that this is, the lines of the heavily gerrymandered district had to be redrawn. Whoever gets elected there, this district isn't going to exist in the next election cycle. That's one reason you may know about it. The other reason, or another reason, many are calling it a test of Trump and the GOP's popularity among Trump's base of white working class voters, which that district is overwhelmingly. He won there, as we were talking about earlier in the show, by like 20 points over Hillary Clinton. And there's been a Republican in Congress from there for many years. And yet the polls show it's very, very close. So this might be a bellwether election for Trump and what he represents. But if Democrats treat this as a sign of whether white swing voters can be swung, they may be barking up the wrong tree, at least according to our next guest. Steve Phillips, a civil rights lawyer and founder of Democracy in Color, is the author of Brown is the New White, How a Demographic Revolution Has Created a New American Majority. His book asserts that the Democratic Party has to shake its habit of pursuing white swing voters and recognize the 51% progressive and multiracial majority of eligible voters as the key to victory today, in his view. If any of this sounds familiar, no, it's not deja vu. Steve came on the show to discuss the original release of the book in early 2016. And of course, that was before the election. So a new edition of the book is out now with some updates to reflect the election and things that have happened since. And yes, spoiler alert, Steve Phillips doubles down on his original assertion that future Democratic success depends on the new American majority. Steve, thanks for coming back on the show. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me back. Glad to be here.
If I could start with the news, have you been following the special election in Pennsylvania? Is it a bellwether for anything related to your book or not really, because even though there are a lot of registered Democrats there, the district is so overwhelmingly white?
Yeah, no, I have been following it, and I don't think people are generally grasping it correctly. And so what all my analysis has shown is that there are what I call a meaningful minority of whites who are progressive, and a meaningful minority of white working class voters who are progressive. But there's a ceiling. All of the data shows that there's a ceiling. And so I say, part of one of the things I say is, well, what about those whites who are with us? Why don't we embrace them and show them some love? But the upside is in the growing communities, which is the communities of color, that are the fastest growing populations within the country. And that if you take those progressive whites, ally them with the overwhelming majority of people of color, that's the coalition that elected and reelected Obama. And though it's often forgotten, that's the grouping that gave the majority of the votes cast to Hillary Clinton.
Why do they need to be grouped as separate entities like that? Is there not a democratic set of policies, I guess, and values that could unite the people of color, the more educated, city and suburb dwelling whites, and the white working class, who you say hold some progressive values? I mean, can they not be held together in one coalition? Because it almost sounds like you're saying Democrats, as a path to victory, need to ignore whatever those things are about white working class voters that might bring them back into the Democratic fold, or am I misunderstanding?
Yeah, no, what I'm saying, again, first of all, is that there is to embrace the progressive white working class voters.
Right.
And to acknowledge and support them, but it's to stop trying to chase the conservative white working class voters. And then for all this talk about, well, isn't there an economic agenda that will actually appeal to the working class, et cetera? The vast majority of voters of color are working class. And so this notion that we're not actually appealing to working class voters is incorrect. We're not getting a larger share of white working class voters. Mm-hmm. And then that leaps over to the majority of all white voters have always voted against the Democrat ever since Lyndon Johnson signed the Voting Rights Act.
How did Hillary Clinton do in this respect, in your opinion?
Well, she didn't do well enough. And she tried to straddle the line. I mean, one thing people don't appreciate historically is just how close this election was and what a really perfect storm it was. She won the popular vote by 3 million votes. Trump did not win. This is one of the main arguments I'm trying to explain in the second edition of the book. Mm-hmm. Trump did not win a majority in the states that gave him the Electoral College, Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Florida. The progressive vote splintered is a big part of what actually happened. There was an increase for the Jill Stein and Johnson. And you had a dramatic drop off of the black vote. There's just been pieces in the Washington Post and New York Times talking about the how many black voters were not didn't come out. And that if black voters have voted at the same rate they voted in 2012, Hillary Clinton will be president right now.
In other words, when you say Trump did, people may be thinking, what? You have to win to get the electoral vote. So when you say he didn't get a majority of the votes in those key swing states, it's that he didn't get over 50% because there were some third-party candidates who got a little, right?
Exactly. Wisconsin's the best example. Trump got fewer votes in Wisconsin than Romney did 4 years earlier. But the Democratic vote dropped even below that, and the third and fourth party vote went up. And so that's a very important strategic data point to understand. Because do you actually then try to figure out how to get these alleged Obama-Trump voters, which there are not very many of, or do you try to reassemble the progressive coalition and re-inspire that coalition to come back out?
And Republicans, are they aware of the new American majority, as the title of your book has it? And are they doing anything that you see to try to attract people in the new American majority, or are they just doubling down in this Trump kind of way on, you know, white identity politics?
Right. So those are two different questions. Are they aware and are they doing anything to try to attract people? They're extremely aware. And I did a piece in the New York Times a few weeks ago saying that Trump is trying to make America white again. The specific policies he's going after in this immigration reform piece are the exact policies that led to the demographic transformation of the country. When we finally took down the whites-only borders at whites-only signs at our borders, and the U.S. immigration policy did explicitly say to be a citizen you had to be a free white person, when we finally took that down, the country transformed. It went from 12% people of color to almost 40% now. Those laws are what Trump is going after, very specifically in an attempt to actually slow down and reverse the whole course to transform the country. They understand it, but their approach, certainly in this administration, is to try to distort and undermine and suppress.
Of course, even numerically, that won't work, right? Even if they put in every Donald Trump, Tom Cotton, Jeff Sessions immigration restriction, the demographics are already that there are enough Latinos here, Latinos in particular, and the birth rates among Latinos versus whites, again, in particular, those two groups as a contrast, are such that there's going to be a new American majority anyway, and with the restrictionist policies that they advocate, they'll just alienate all the people of color.
Right, exactly. So it actually is too late. This transformation is irreversible and inexorable fundamentally now because of birth rates. The majority of children under 5 years old in this country are already people of color. The majority of births that are happening are people of color. And at the other end of the spectrum, because the U.S. was so racially exclusionary for so long, most old people are white. So if you take birth rates and death rates alone, that this transformation is irreversible now.
Yeah, most old people are white because the less exclusionary immigration policies changed 50 years ago. They changed in 1965.
Exactly.
So that's such a key demarcation line that now that the Trump administration is trying to roll back. Listeners, we could take a few phone calls for Steve Phillips, the new edition of his book, Brown is the New White, is now out. Subtitle, How a Demographic Revolution Has Created a New American Majority, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-WNYC. 9692. And I just want to touch on Asian Americans here for a second before we break and then take some calls, because they're also now a pretty fast-growing segment of the population, although still many fewer people here than there are African Americans or than there are Latinos. But that was a group that, for various cultural and economic reasons, could have leaned and was starting to lean somewhat Republican in past decades. And what seems to me happened, and I'm really curious to get your take as someone who studied this so closely, the Republicans just alienated them by being so anti-immigrant. And so now you have, in the last few elections, Asian Americans voting for Democrats for president in about the same proportion that Latinos and Jews do.
Yeah, no, that's exactly the case. And I was doing the research for the book. I remember I came home and asked my wife, and I was like, why do Republicans have to be so racist? If they weren't so racist, they actually could actually broaden their appeal, actually. So, but they'd so doubled down on that sector of the population that's responsive to racial resentment arguments that exactly. So in the early 90s, the Asian American vote was much more split in terms of its partisan affiliations. But in the past 10 plus years, it's become solidified much more as a Democratic vote. And I do think it's exactly what you're saying related to the reaction to the racial hostility that the Republicans and conservatives have laid out. And the population is significant. In California, the Asian American vote is larger than the African American vote now. And statewide. And so that is a politically significant constituency. John Chang, as a Chinese American, is running for governor, and he's competitive in terms of the polls. So in certain geographic areas, that population actually can be quite determinative.
We'll continue with Steve Phillips and take some phone calls for him right after this. WNYC with Steve Phillips, civil rights lawyer, founder of the group Democracy in Color, and the author of Brown is the New White, How a Demographic Revolution Has Created a New American Majority, with an updated version now out for the post-Trump election universe. And Ron in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ron.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
Good to hear you. My point is that most Hispanics are not what you would call a minority group or color. Most Hispanics and many Hispanics are white, and that they will, over time, in a generation or two, become part of the white voting group as opposed to a separate minority group. Just like Italians 100 years ago and Jews 100 years ago were not considered part of the majority. They were considered a minority group, and I think that they will most Hispanic folks will just be, Spanish surname. Look at Senator Menendez from New Jersey. You know, he has an Hispanic name, but, he's like the Cuomo of his generation.
Ron, thank you very much. What do you think about that thesis and using the Jews and Italians as historical reference points, Steve?
Yeah, no, it's an important point to understand, but I don't think that the caller's argument is actually correct in that people don't appreciate is that they focus on a group saying that this is my group and this is my identity, and then they turn around and they say, well, why do you define yourselves that way? The history and the larger context that this country has defined people as either white or not white, right? The first immigration law, you have to be a free white person. Up to today, Hispanics, there may be some who think that they're white, which is really more of a defect in the census form that people are misinterpreting. Because there's not anything else to check, actually, frequently is the problem. But we have a president in the United States who has risen to power and continues to hold power by demonizing Mexicans. So most Hispanics are Mexican, or Mexican-American. And so that population group does not feel like they are as treated the same way whites are. And with the immigration enforcement and the deportations and the whole anti-DACA piece, this is targeting largely Mexican-Americans. And that population does not feel embraced and included in this country and valued in any way that that is equal or fair.
John in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, John.
Hi, good morning.
Go ahead.
What I'm going to say is going to sound a little bit on the fringe of conspiracy theories, but I am aware that whites are really knowledgeable of what's going on with the demographics that have changed this country. And this is why you see all these militias forming, and they are being so gung-ho for the Second Amendment. These people are arming themselves to the teeth, and I am afraid what this is going to bring in the future as it goes with black people and people of color.
John, thank you very much. Let me get a take. And Steve, you know, he said conspiracy theory. Another way to look at it, is that it's the most dystopian future, right, as the country becomes one in which there is no ethnic majority, that everybody retreats to their camps, that there's all kinds of ethnic nationalism, racial nationalism, call it whatever, that springs up in all the camps because everybody's suspicious of everyone else, and then eventually an actual shooting civil war breaks out. Have you thought about that possibility?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's unfortunately, it's not a conspiracy theory. I mean, in the past week in Austin, Texas, bombs are being exploded at the homes of black families.
That's right.
And a 17-year-old black youth was killed. And it's been like three or four different black families that are very well known. And so clearly they're being targeted.
There was one Hispanic target of those bombs. Also, last I knew, Austin police were still figuring out if they thought race was a motivation, but certainly the pattern indicates that it might be.
Right. And so, and then you know, the Southern Poverty Law Center has talked about the increase in the hate groups and the white nationalist groups. And so when you have a president of the United States defending the white supremacist rally, that sends a powerful message to people who are formerly on the fringes and now think they have their champion in the White House.
Which brings us back, I guess, to the political parties and the kinds of coalitions that they form in order to win office. And if you're arguing for the Democrats to win by focusing more on the political needs of, blacks, Hispanics, and Asians, plus progressive whites, is there enough unity in that? Is there an unum in the e pluribus to pull people together to avoid that dystopian future?
Yeah, no, I think it's true, and this talking about what is the way to win elections, right? And so you look at Obama's election, look at Obama's re-election, which is even more important because he lost 5 million white votes and still won re-election. And it's not accidental that the country's first black president was elected when he was elected, 50 years after the immigration laws were changed, after voting rights law was changed, so you could have a more diverse population. And that, the unifying point, and this is my main critique of the Democrats, is I actually think that they underestimate white people in terms of their ability to take a stand against racism and their ability to stand for a multiracial country. We are locked in a struggle right now, particularly with this president, around what direction and what is the definition of this country. Is this going to be a straight white male Christian country, as this president champions, or is this going to be a multiracial, diverse, inclusive country? And that notion around we are all part of this together, we are all valued, all of our cultures are important, is the unifying thread that can create the majority, that can win elections, can take our country back.
John in Long Beach, you're on WNYC. Hi, John.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
And forgive me in advance, we've got about 20 seconds for you.
Okay, your guest analysis is sort of the kind of retreaded identity politics we've been hearing for about 20 years, and it has no way to explain how it is that states that voted for Obama twice ended up voting for Trump. We talk Florida, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Michigan, on and on and on. All right, there's no explanation. Just to say that white people are racists is a good. That is why the Democrats do not control the White House, the Senate, Congress, or three quarters of the state houses. This is the path to the Democrats being a permanent minority party.
John, thank you. Steve, what do you say to John?
Well, it's a perfect plug as we wrap up, because that is exactly what we analyze in the second edition of the book, is how Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania all went from supporting Obama to supporting Trump. And the spoiler is that it was not everybody flipping to Trump. It was the fracturing of the Democratic coalition to third and fourth parties in an uninspired situation where African-American voters did not come out in the same numbers they had previously.
And we have a good minute left. I give the questioner a certain amount of time, and then you get a longer time for the answer. So what are the main things that you would have our listeners watch for in this 2018 election year as we see if the Democrats can use the backlash against Trump as a starting point to regain control of the House or Senate?
Yeah, so the single most important lesson, which I think people have not understood, is that Trump does not represent a majority of the people. And he wasn't elected with the majority of the people, and he certainly has made no effort to expand his support. And so there's kind of a strategic crisis of conscience on the progressive side around how do we go about reassembling a majority. And that fails to understand the election results properly. And so if you understand that this man's agenda, that his vision for the country is really representing a small, narrow, and frankly, frequently hateful sector, we would carry ourselves with more confidence and more outrage and appeal to the rest of the country to stand up against it, say no to the racism, the sexism, the xenophobia, because that's what's actually happening, but that's not the majority agenda.
And now we're out of time with Steve Phillips, civil rights lawyer, founder of the group Democracy in Color, and the author of Brown is the New White, How a Demographic Revolution Has Created a New American Majority, now out in a revised and updated edition to reflect the post-Trump election era. Thank you so much for coming on with us.
Thanks for having me.